First, though, the amount of money the Homeland Security Department spends on administratively uncontrollable overtime is on the rise. The Government Accountability Office says it's up about 30% since 2008, but the management system DHS uses is having a hard time keeping up. Dave Maurer is Director of Homeland Security and Justice Issues at GAO, and he is looking at ways for DHS to improve that system. Let's start with the basics. Administratively uncontrollable overtime, Dave, to my knowledge, is peculiar to the Homeland Security Department. Is it, in fact, only done at DHS? And what is it? How does it work? Thanks for being on, Dave.
Hey, thanks so much, Francis. It's a pleasure to be on your program, as always. Yeah, currently AUO is nearly exclusively used by the Department of Homeland Security. There's still a few other places around the federal government that use it. It's been around for about 40-plus years. It used to be widely used across the federal government, largely in federal law enforcement agencies. Most of those, including the FBI, for example, have switched to other pay systems because, as it turns out, AUO is incredibly complicated, administratively burdensome, and there are a lot of loopholes that can be exploited.
What have other agencies switched to before we get into the issues that you found about what's happening at DHS?
Well, for example, FBI and a number of other agencies have what they call law enforcement availability pay, or LEAP pay, which basically says, hey, you're an FBI agent, you're expected to be available for roughly 10 hours a day to perform duties as required for your position, and we'll compensate you accordingly. AUO works differently, and it's there's a lot more rigmarole and administrivia involved, and that's part of the root cause of many of the problems that have been identified over the years.
So let me tell you my understanding of it based on conversations with people who have worked on this issue. My understanding of it is that AUO is available to managers so that if I'm out on, say, I'm a Border Patrol agent, and I do an eight-hour shift, and some event is taking place where it would be unreasonable for me to say, well, my shift's over, I'm off the clock. I can file for AUO and receive compensation if I had to be on the job for an extra hour and a half or whatever. Is my understanding of it correct?
Your understanding is absolutely correct. And the key word about AUO is uncontrollable. I mean, as a general proposition, when you come in at the beginning of the day, you shouldn't know whether you'll need to charge AUO at the end of the day. At least that's the way the regulations and the policies and the law is written. The way it's used is actually quite different.
Well, and that's where the issue came up for Senator John Tester. He and I spoke about this in the summer, and his issue was that many managers were using AUO. He didn't say it this way, but my understanding of it was this was essentially a backdoor pay raise where you could give people AUO even when there were cases where they worked the overtime and people knew in advance they were going to work the overtime.
I think that's a fair assessment. And look, and some of the work that we did in our report, we found that 90% of the people who were eligible for AUO in 2013 at DHS were earning the full amount of AUO all the time. And that doesn't sound uncontrollable and it doesn't sound unpredictable. And that's the root of the problem. A culture takes hold where people understandably want to work the extra hours because they're getting 25% extra pay.
There are a number of figures and so on in this report, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, Dave. I think the item that stuck out to me the most was you write that some DHS component policies aren't consistent with certain provisions of federal regulations or guidance, and components haven't regularly followed their respective AUO policies and procedures. It's one thing to have a policy or a procedure that is in line with the law and then to look at the issues involved there. But if you're not even doing that, it strikes me that you're kind of defeating the entire purpose of the policy in the first place.
Right, absolutely. You would expect that. I mean, obviously, there's going to be federal government-wide policy, but you would want each of the components and each of the agencies within DHS and elsewhere to follow the general rules on things like, okay, what positions should be eligible for AUO? How frequently should you be checking to make sure that your employees are actually working the AUO that they've claimed? How often are you going to check to make sure that their pay levels are being changed based on the number of hours that they're recording for AUO work?
You point out two examples of problems that you found with compliance. You write, components have not consistently reviewed hours claimed and employee eligibility for AUO. Did you find, pursuant to that, that agencies were giving AUO to people who weren't qualified to take it, or is it just that possibility exists since managerially nobody was exercising that control?
It was more the latter. In our review, we were looking sort of broadly across, you know, comparing policies at the component level to what federal guidance requires. We didn't drill down into specific examples. So that definitely there was the risk that people who should never have been eligible for AUO were in fact receiving AUO, or people who were eligible were working a number of hours that were not administratively uncontrollable hours. There's no doubt that that was taking place. There have been other organizations that have looked into the details and found many examples of this going on. The bottom line situation, though, is that AUO is being used frequently in widespread manner, is being used nearly consistently across a number of the job occupations at DHS, specifically Border Patrol, which is about three-quarters of the people at DHS that get AUO. And it's problematic because it was not being used in a way consistent with federal law or policy.
Now, when this issue first popped up, or this time around, I should say, this has been around for a while, but when this round of attention came up beginning of this year, you write, in 2014, DHS issued two memoranda. One required the suspension of AUO for certain employees. The other required components to submit plans to address deficiencies, which most DHS components have done. So you kind of answered one of my questions with that last statement. Most DHS components have submitted these plans to address the deficiencies. But what about the suspension of AUO for certain employees? How have the agents or the components responded? And when you say most, is that 50.111%, or is that a majority of the components that use AUO, or how does that rank?
Yeah, well, the first memo, first off, I want to give a lot of credit to the DHS secretary and the deputy secretary for taking this issue head on. And they were the individuals who issued those memos, and they've been on this issue for most of the year. The secretary, at his direction, ended up decertifying 900 positions across the department for any future use of AUO. In other words, you know, these are typically trainers or people in headquarters or support positions where you couldn't foresee why they would need to have administratively uncontrollable overtime. That was essentially the first memo. The second one was by the deputy secretary, which was very blunt and very frank about the administrator's failure to follow policies and guidance for AUO across the department, and required the various components to submit these corrective action plans. Now, action plans and memos and things are great, but we want to make sure that implementation takes place, which is why we recommended in our report that the secretary put in place a monitoring mechanism to make sure that the DHS or components are doing what they say they're going to do in their plans.
Now, DHS says they're going to do that every 3 to 4 years, but you write, this monitoring is too general and infrequent to effectively monitor or evaluate DHS's component progress. Is there a number that is the right number, or do you just know that 3 to 4 years isn't often enough, Dave?
Yeah, we definitely felt 3 to 4 years is not often enough. I think the department's in the process of developing policy on this in response to our report. I think annually is probably a good thing to do, to have a good check-in. I mean, look, Border Patrol was a subject of an Inspector General's report in 1997. It was the same issue. It was misuse of AUO. It was the same exact topics that were discussed in our report in 2014, nearly 2015. So we think that's why we think it's important for DHS leadership and the Congress to keep their eye on the ball on this one, to make sure change actually happens.
And that you recommend that it's something Congress should consider requiring DHS to do, make it annual legislatively, it looks like.
That's something we want Congress to consider. And actually, Congress has taken action on one important piece of this. Earlier this month, they passed legislation through the House and the Senate to reform how Border Patrol agents are paid, moving essentially to the rough equivalent of law enforcement availability pay. If it's signed into law by the president, that means three-quarters of the employees at DHS who currently receive AUO will move to a different pay system, and that will help solve a big chunk of this problem.
I don't know if it was in the purview of your work here to make that kind of a recommendation or not, but did you get any sense when you looked at this with all of the other law enforcement agencies that have moved to some other type of pay plan, did you get any sense of why DHS has stuck with AUO for so long?
You know, we looked at, and when we talked to DHS officials, particularly at Border Patrol, they have been trying to move this legislation to change the pay system for Border Patrol agents for the last several years. So they've been trying to fix the problem. For the other parts of, you know, the remaining pockets of DHS are going to be at Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the folks who do sort of detention and removal operations. You know, it's not clear you know, why they haven't tried to move out on that front. But you know, I don't want to paint that as a negative or a positive. We just didn't get into the whys.
Sure, and it's not always in the scope of the work that Congress asks you to do. It does appear, though, that DHS is serious about this based on some of the changes that you report, Dave. And I thank you for coming on and talk about your work, as always.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, and have a happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you. David Maurer is Director of Homeland Security and Justice Issues at the Government Accountability Office.